Interviews with Haunting Gurus.
All right, we have illustrator, set designer, custom prop maker, and cartoonist, Dave Lowe.
Hello.
Dave, hey, you are quite the jack of all trades.
Yeah.
And the master of many, from the looks of it.
Well, I don't know about master, but when you list the credits, yeah, I guess it is a jack of all trades. But yeah, that's kind of what happened. When all you can do is draw well, you find there's a lot of ways to make money doing that, and you just kind of fall into different jobs and different ways to make money.
Sometimes people just have a talent for things, and they can usually, express that in different mediums and whatnot.
I mean, in my case, I was, thank God I could draw, because if I couldn't draw, I'd have no ability to earn a living. But
is that what you do? Is that your day job?
My day job now, I'm actually a working prop man. I'm working on a show called Home and Family on the Hallmark Channel. It's a daily show, but I started out. I went to art school, and I went to Rhode Island School of Design.
RISD.
Yeah. Oh, good. You know it. A lot of either people know RISD or they don't. You know, when I wear the T-shirt that says RISD, they go, "What's that?" Or they go, "Oh, yeah, I know that school." But yeah, I graduated there with an illustration degree, and I wanted to be the next Marie Sendak or get into comics and children's book illustration. And I ended up moving to California. That's because my dad's work took him there, and so I was growing up in New York at the time. So I came back like a bum after graduating and lived with my folks for a while. And then, you know, it's funny because I fell into TV work. Just to have a summer job. I got a job as a production assistant, and because I was, I guess, the artistic guy, they kept throwing the more artistic jobs at me, and one thing led to another, and now I kind of do a lot of television work in the props and art department more than I do illustrating anymore. I used to do a lot of freelance stuff. I used to do activity books for kids and things like that, but really now the TV work has become more and more my pay the rent work, where the more artistic illustrating and cartooning is the stuff I do on the side.
It's more of your hobby or passion versus doing paying the bills.
A little bit, yeah. Which is kind of odd how it flip flopped like that. I set out to be one thing and I end up being another, and that's
don't we all
became the jack of all trades, you know? Because you pick up all these different skills along the way, so. So you find, and I still try to keep my interests in different directions, and I don't turn down any job, whether it's just doing a little drawing for someone's website or if it's like a larger project. I just love being creative, so anything that comes my way, I love to just jump on it.
I mean, obviously, well, part of your passion, and it comes through in your blog, is that you do your yard haunt. You seem to be very passionate about that. How long have you had the sickness? How long have you been doing this?
Well, I've loved Halloween. Going way back, but I didn't get passionate about actually decorating the yard till about I think the first year was around 94 or 95. That was the first year, and I was renting a house in Burbank, California, and I going back to the set design, I was doing set design for a little show called Sci-Fi Buzz on the Sci-Fi Channel, when Sci-Fi Channel was brand new, when it was still SCIFI.
Oh yeah, before they
made it SIFI,
all trendy.
Exactly. So that's when the show was cool, and it was a neat little show, and part of it was a cool little set because it was like the Entertainment Tonight of the sci-fi world. So they talk about everything going on in the world of sci-fi. So the way we designed the set, we actually designed areas that was like the horror area, the fantasy area, the comic book area that would kind of represent each topic the show would cover. So in the horror area, I had designed an electric chair. I put an electric chair in there and kind of a coffin with a mummy in it. The show was so cheap that I would actually have to store a lot of the props at my house in between segments, you know, in between shoot dates. So it just happened to fall on Halloween when I had the stuff at my house. So I thought, I got the electric chair and coffin. I put those out on the lawn just for fun. And the neighborhood kids went nuts. And they were coming by every day going, you're going to put more out? You're going to put more out? And that's where I go. That's where I got really into the decorating. Because then I would. I'd run out there every night and try to throw something else out there. and then that's when it just got fun. And that was the first year I remember. Well, there was a year before that or so, but it was the first year I realized that you don't have to be a trick or treater to love Halloween and enjoy the holidays. You know, you can transition to being the scarer, not the scary. You know.
Yeah. I almost learned that when I was 12 years old. I started doing this when I was about 12, and at that time, being 12, in my neighborhood, that's when kids stopped trick-or-treating, you know, right. So, which now I see kids way into their teens trick-or-treating, so, I mean, but when I was a kid, that's the way it was, and you started going out and egging the other kids when you were that age, you know, maybe when you were 13, that was like your rite of passage.
Yeah, you do.
I started egging the other kids, and I didn't want to do that. I had no interest in that. And I wanted to do this. I wanted to start decorating the yard and trying to scare kids. And just, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it was strange for me because like, I always loved Halloween as a kid. And it was, and I loved it more than the other kids. Like, to me, there was a special magic to that night. And when I grew up, nobody decorated. Like, there'd be a pumpkin, of course. But when I was a kid, it was way before the you even had orange lights or the purple lights. There was nothing.
There weren't store bought tombstones.
There was nothing. So you just went around and so anybody who even had music, like I remember one of my neighbors who actually happened to be my fifth grade math teacher, Mrs. Holsabash, she was the equivalent of like someone who goes all out. But all she would do was blare that old Disney Haunted Mansion album. The sound effect album, Outer Window.
Yeah.
And that was, she became the Halloween house, but all she did was blare music. So back when I was a kid, nobody really decorated. It wasn't until like I got older that people actually started to, but nobody, at least when I was like renting that house in Burbank, nobody in my neighborhood really went all out. So I never really, and this was before the web and everything else. So I never really knew there were people out there going insane and going crazy. So when I started at putting stuff out on the lawn, you know, everybody in the neighborhood gravitated to it. And that's when I thought I could go bigger. I could go better. And then slowly I discovered there were more and more people doing this and going crazy. And then I didn't feel alone. And that made it even better because then, you know, you just get inspired. And especially the kids every year, the way they react and,
that's the big driving force between the parents and the kids and, you know, watching people come to the yard and just stare at the yard and just in amazement, like, wow, this is just, you know, fantastic. You could see that, you know, they don't even have to say it to you. You can see in their eyes, you know, what they're thinking and they're just loving it. Yeah, you know, it's that one special magical night. And everybody can kind of absorb what you're doing, and it's really crazy, and I'm a total fanatic about it. You know, I can't even explain this to people, and I don't even try to. I try to hide it from people. I don't try to tell. I mean, if it came out point blank, you know, somebody, you know, questioned me on it, and you said, "Hey, oh yeah, you do that Halloween house? Oh yeah, you know." But I would never bring it up in conversation with people. I have a guy at the post office, one of the postal workers. I went in there to go mail out some T-shirts, and he looked at the address, and he goes, oh, you're that Halloween house. He's like, oh, I love it. I think my kid force like drags me over there every year. He absolutely loves your house. Yeah.
I've gotten that, too. I've met, like, a friend of a friend or something, or you meet someone who you're like, oh, I live over on such and such street. And I go, oh, that's, like, two blocks from me. And they're like, oh, yeah, where do you live? Oh, I live over on this street. And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I go, and then they go, there's a great Halloween house on that block every year that I bring. I go, I think that's me. Like, wait, is that the one? Yeah, with the Frankenstein. Yeah, that's me. And they're like, oh, no way.
Yeah.
And they all get all, you know, and then suddenly
you're like, is this somebody else competing with me on my street?
Yeah,
no, that's gotta be me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's kind of fun. I mean, one fun thing is, like, over the years on the street I'm on now is it's been enough years that now some of the neighbors are getting into it too. So it's really becoming, you know, the whole block is kind of
Oh, you absolutely suck other people right in with you. You become a little vortex and you just suck them all right in. So let's talk about some of the props. I actually, from looking at the haunt, I think it's almost, it's kind of a cross between Universal Horror and Looney Tunes. I get this vibe that you draw from those. Am I wrong?
Well, okay, you're not wrong. I mean, am I intentionally drawing from it? No. But it's just, it's ingrained, it's just in my blood. I mean, I grew up watching... You know, I didn't have cable as a kid. All I had was the old reruns at night, and you had a lot of the old horror movies. And I just, you know, and just being the cartoonist, I always loved Looney Tunes, and it, I guess it's the children's book thing in me too. I try to keep if there's anything intentional about my haunt, what I try to do is remember that Halloween really is for kids. You know, you want to make it fun for them, but Halloween's about horror and just kind of trying to find a lot of humor in that. And I love the classic horror. I love, you know, there's certain staples, you know, like Frankenstein. You know, it's like you can't beat the Frankenstein's monster at Halloween, you know? So I don't really intentionally try to blur them together or mesh them together, but I think it's just in me to try and put a little humor and a little fun, but also try to keep it scary enough, just try to strike that balance so it's scary enough and interesting enough for the adults and the older teens, but you know, with a little wink and you know, a little humor.
Yeah, you know. You're a little cheeky bastard, you are.
Okay.
No, I mean, but like, it's a little whimsical. It's not too overly. It's not gory. It's like kid horror. It's like, it's, you know, you've got the imagery without it being like over the top or anything. All your props are handmade, except for a few things here and there. Some of the masks are not handmade. Frankenstein's head wasn't handmade, but the rest of his body and the obviously the electric chair that you have him in was constructed by yourself. And so, what's the build of the body of the Frankenstein prop that you have?
Well, at first, the electric chair is actually that's the first prop I put out. I mentioned earlier about from that old Sci-Fi Buzz show. That was actually built by a carpenter friend of mine, Greg Holloman. And that was the very first prop I put on the lawn years ago that where I really got into it. But so it's kind of traditional. I have to put that guy out. I have to put the electric chair out there. But the Frankenstein monster, it's a store-bought mask that I bought that I saw at a Halloween Town, a store here in, you know, nearby in Burbank. And it just looked great. I'm a big believer in if you find something store-bought and it looks good, use it. But if you can, you know, upgrade it or make it better, why not? You know, not everything has to be custom made from scratch, you know?
Yeah.
So the body itself, it's real simple. I mean, actually more low tech than I see a lot of bloggers and people, you know, on the web posting. It's just basically a T-framed couple pieces of 2x4. The base is just two cross beams of 2x4 with another 2x4 coming up the top, and I just shoved the mask on top, and I've stuffed the body with that upholstery foam, that green upholstery foam you can pick up at Joann or Michaels anywhere, and just kind of molded the body with that, and no joke, literally duct tape, just formed the chest and the stomach out of duct tape, and the arms are stuffed with the newspaper, and the legs are stuffed with newspaper. And then a couple of rubber hands that I picked up at another Halloween shop or one of those pop-up stores at the mall. And the boots are those electrical boots you pick up at any hardware store, you know, those big, tall rubber boots. So it's super, super simple. I mean, it's your classic stuff scarecrow, basically.
Yeah, sometimes the simplest things are, you know, just great. They just work. They just work, man. They just work. The skeletons, are those blow mold skeletons, and then you kind of redesign the entire head. What I mean, I love that the skeletons are my favorite. I know you do the hands too, because I can tell the fingers are something that you sculpt. We'll talk about the hands in a minute. What do you do with the heads, and are they blow mold skeletons?
Yeah, the blow molds, the Bluckies, right?
Yeah,
yeah, they're just those, and the only major customization on those is the. Is the hands and the heads. And the heads, I just I cut the eye sockets out. I just paint ping pong balls and stick those in there and glue them in, and just try to paint them up pretty nice, you know, try to paint the teeth in, you know, a little bit more accurately. And then the bodies, I run wire up and through, if not wire, just garden stakes, really thin metal garden stakes. And I fill them with a great stuff foam. Just shove the foam in there, and I got build it a little bit at a time. And in some cases, maybe I'll take one arm and I'll run the wood dowels or the garden stakes, and I'll fill them with great stuff foam. So there's a little like 2-inch, 3-inch piece of the garden stake or the dowel coming out, and then I fill the torso with great stuff foam. So then I just shove it in, just. Stick it into the foam, and then I hot glue them together. It's a pretty low tech construction, and I kind of construct them as I go. You know, not to be all autistic, but like a sculptor, I step back and I say, okay, is that angle right? Is that angle bad? But once I've got the main torso together, I leave the head and the hands to last, because I think, you know, that's where the real expression comes from. Yeah, and then I don't put the eyeballs in till the very end usually. Or at least glue them in till the very end. So that way once I see them in place, I know, you know, get a good sense of which way I want them looking, or it's like you got that Simpsons eye where you could have one eyeball going left and one eye going right, you know?
Yeah.
So you could either do that or you know, it's funny. The eyes are the most important to me because with my eyes, I just kind of spray paint the ping pong balls yellow. Because I like that hepatitis feel, and then just a simple little blotch of black, for the main eye, and just a little touch of white, you know, for a little white highlight, and then you gloss it up. It actually brings it to life, and it's amazing how just the eye will really.
They have a ton of character. So they come so to life, and it's not in a scary way. They're very kind of. Comical in a sense, I guess.
I think that goes back to my cartooning. If you look at any cartoonist's work, especially the old Disney cartoons, it's like the pupils are never really round. They're kind of oval shaped, and they're it's always a little off center. I mean, whether it's a little cross-eyed or a little, even if they're looking left or looking right, if the eyes are just kind of off center enough, somehow it brings it to life. You know, you could sit there for hours trying to make sure that it's got the perfect eye line, but if everything's just like not quite right, somehow it feels more alive. I can't explain it better than that.
I guess that's the beauty with building Halloween props and horror props, is that they don't have to be absolutely perfect. And the less perfect they are, the better they are, probably, because you don't want things to be perfect. You know, if you're doing a coffin, you don't want the wood to perfectly match.
Yeah, exactly. Everything in life is like, this is gonna sound really stupid, but you remember that movie Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams?
I had never seen it, no.
Okay, well, there's this scene in that movie with Oliver Platt. He plays the genius who actually created the robots in that movie. And Oliver Platt is kind of making a mold or creating one of the robots. And he just has this kind of line where the secret to realism is imperfection. And that's kind of it. You know, if you look at anything in life, nothing's perfect. If you make a face symmetrical, if you make the right side of one person's face and then you just copy and paste it and flip it over, they look artificial. But if, you know, everything's a little off center or everything weird, it brings it to life more for some reason.
Yeah.
And the same goes for eyes, same goes for ears, same goes for hair. And being Halloween, everything's a little distorted and weird. So it just adds to the flavor, I guess.
Definitely.
You know?
Just explain how you build the hands. I mean, I know you're using some kind of molding or model clay or something. What do you use?
I use stuff called Model Magic by Creel, it's usually in the kids craft aisle. They even sell it at Target, which is pretty cool. They sell it, you know, pretty much. I found some at Walmart, or not Walmart, at Walgreens, at CVS. You know, one of those.
You can get it anywhere, pretty
much. Yeah, it's and they come in little packages, and the stuff. I fell in love with the stuff years ago. It's like, I've turned other people onto it. It's great stuff. Not to confuse it with great stuff foam, but it's really cool stuff. I love it. It's an air hardening clay, but it's foamy. So when it dries, it's super lightweight and super hard. But when you use it, it's like any clay, but you can add a little water to it. You can mold it and shape it. So when I do the hands, what I usually do is I cut the fingers off the palms off of the Bluckies. And I just, I start with the palms, and then what I do is insert just ordinary dry cleaner wire, is good enough. And I just kind of, that's the base coming out of each finger. You got all five wires coming out. And I set that aside, whether I glue those into the palm or add a little great stuff foam. But in the meantime, I just go ahead and roll little balls for each knuckle of the finger with the Model Magic clay, and just kind of shape each knuckle, set those aside. It takes a good 24 hours to really harden well, but the stuff usually sets up in, just a few hours, so you can work with it. And then I just slip them over the wire, and once they're on there, I just bend it to shape.
Oh, hold on. So after a few hours, you can push the, and you're using like your hangers, basic wire hangers.
Frustrating? Right now, I'm actually using my hands and showing you how to do it. But okay. We're on radio. So
yeah, it doesn't really work that way. But if you were holding a piece of the bone that you had sculpted out,
right,
you're sticking it through the middle of that piece of bone out the other side so you can attach the other piece of the finger bone to it. After a certain amount of hours, you can push that wire through without any real problems of it breaking apart.
No. I mean, I'd give it at least a couple hours. Okay. The way this stuff hardens, it's one of those things that hardens on the outside quicker than it does on the inside. It's still soft on the inside, but the outside of the clay hardens up enough that it still retains the shape. So it gives you, in a very short time, you're able to just poke the wire through each knuckle and slide them on top of each other. So then I usually set that aside and let that harden. And then when it's really good, then I start to really kind of put the hands into a really good pose or position that I like. Once the stuff gets really, really hard, that's when it becomes a little brittle. So, but as long as you got enough space between the joints, you got enough gap between the wire, then, it still allows you to technically, yeah, you could reshape them and put them in different poses every year. But the way I work, I usually just, once I find the pose I like, I leave it.
And add a little
drop of super glue or hot glue just to keep them there. But yeah, it's cool stuff. And what I like to do when I make the fingers, I bust out knuckles all night long. I'll just sit and I'll make, because I'll know, the season's coming up and I've got, so many zombies planned, and I'll just sit and roll little balls of clay and make my knuckles, and I'll make, longer ones for some parts, shorter ones, and then the tips with a little point to them, and I'll just build up a big bag of them and just have them ready to go. When Model Magic gets really hard, it's a much tougher to just poke the wire through. So in that case, I usually kind of take my Dremel or a really thin drill bit and put a pilot hole in there.
I get you. So you just put a little hole in, and then you put like a small snippet of wire in between the two different fingers.
Right.
So that you can still bend them, but they're not, it's not going through the entire so-called bone or the entire piece of finger.
Yeah, imagine the wire or the marrow going through the whole thing, you know? And so you're sliding each knuckle joint over the wire. So you start with, you know, let's say your finger's got like, you know, four joints on it.
Yeah.
Drop your longer one on first, and your medium size, then your tip with the point. And that's basically how I make the fingers. And I feel like I'm describing it horribly.
No, I'm getting the gist of it. And if other people aren't, then, you know, tough shit. As long as I understand what you're talking about, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
As far as your whole prop cabinet of curiosities, which is just stuffed full of Igasmic original pieces. So if you go, if you were to go to Dave's blog and you look down the right-hand side, you'll see the prop cabinet of curiosities. There's links to all these different projects. Now, like I say, you go beyond the Halloween props, and you go into, you've got some Christmas props there, you got some the Easter bunny for Easter, the leprechaun door. I love the Easter bunny and the leprechaun doors. Those are fantastic.
You know what that is? That is purely because that alleviates the need, the addiction for Halloween. I decided you can't get over decorating your front lawn. And you got Christmas, but Christmas, you know.
And it's pretty simple stuff, too. I mean, you have a nice tree, and so you put the little door on there. You've created the Easter bunny door. And just explain real simple how you build that, because the leprechaun door is pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's. I'm lucky enough to have this big, nice, big tree on my front lawn. And it kind of plays off of like the little gnome doors that people do. And I think I'm sure everybody who's listening knows who Pumpkin Rod is. You know, he's got this little gnome door he mentioned that he made. And it's just that kind of thing. You see him on Pinterest. People put little doors on trees or whatnot. And so I'm just playing off of that. And on the big tree on our front lawn, I thought, well, what the hell? Yeah, for St. Patrick's Day, I went ahead and just made a door out of foam core, and I gave it some wood texture with just some. I think I used fix it all or any spackle will do it. I just kind of slathered it in spackle and just carved some wood grain lines in it, and just added a couple of hinges on it and put it on the door and put a handle on it and put a bucket of gold coins in front of it. That's it. A little touch of leprechaun, you know, like a leprechaun's living in our tree on the front lawn. When Easter came around, I thought it worked great for Easter, so I basically repainted it and made it pink. And instead of a bucket of coins, I put a basket of eggs. And just to really sell the theme for the leprechaun door, I kind of made the little window in the door look like a shamrock. And for Easter, I kind of retooled it. So it looked like the little window in the door looked like a bunny with a couple of ears poking out. But super simple, it adds a little touch of fun, you know?
Yeah, so it's, instead of, going out and getting inflatables, you can still do a little something that's using your skill set. It's just having a little fun with it. In the reindeer was a great prop that you do where you have it up in your chimney and you have the lights kind of hanging off his ear if he crashed in and landed and he's stuck in your chimney or something. And that's just fun. And that's something I could get into doing. You know, putting out a little manger on my yard doesn't excite me, but doing something that was a little bit clever or fun. I could get into doing that.
Well, that's that. Like I said, it like feeds that Halloween decorating addiction. You know, it kind of, you know, I no joke. I was literally doing that to just give me a reason to make something and kind of keep that flame alive. And I think the one distinction between Halloween decorators and other people who do stuff you know, for other holidays, especially the big Christmas decorators, is the Halloween folk. And one thing I'm working on is, like, I am in love with the people who create the backstories and have these, you know, great epic tales as to what you're looking at and why it's there and why it's happening. And they get all into the details, and the props tell a story and all that stuff. And I thought, you can do that for other holidays. And that's where I kind of was going with the leprechaun thing. I love, you know, for St. Patrick's Day. Also, St. Patrick's Day, it's not a holiday you decorate for. So what? Why not? You know, if you're going to custom make props, why not custom make them for another holiday and add that same kind of storytelling element to it, where it's a little fun, a little off kilter, and not something people are used to seeing, you know?
Yeah, catching people off guard is always is a good thing, you know, because that's when people really get a good laugh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not because it's funny; it's just because it's just not what they're expecting, and it just gives them a good chuckle because it just it's something different, unique. Hey, as far as what you have coming up this year, what are you working on? What are you anything new that you can let us in on that that you're going to add to your display this year?
I'm still working on the ultimate backstory for my haunt because I just love that. I love that people do that. I've got so many projects that backlog that I'm trying to catch up on and make happen. And one that I'm definitely like high up on the queue is finally finishing this like rooftop UFO that I've been trying to do for years. And
you haven't put that spaceship yet. Oh, yeah.
So okay, you've seen you.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it. It's amazing. Yeah,
it's never made it to the roof. It's been an idea that's been there for a long time, and I've worked on it. And last year I got it to a point where it could go up on the roof, but I never really got the time. You know, the 31st caught up with me, and I never actually got it done. So that's the big one this year. That's the major one because that's. You know, I don't want to give away my backstory, but that's the key to my backstory.
Sometimes it's just going back and finishing off the projects that you haven't done the year before or the year before that. So, or revamping other props. I don't think you need to keep constantly adding on more and more and more. Sometimes you do have to just step back and revamp.
I agree. And another thing that I've discovered in the last couple of years is just the... you know, just filling in those little holes. I mean, sometimes you get so preoccupied with this one great prop, and then you lay everything out on the lawn, you're going, just little details in between those props would really bring it to life.
Yeah, tie it together.
Yeah, you know, even if it's just a little stack of pumpkins, or even if it's just, you know, whatever in the corner, you know, just something to fill those little holes that really sells what you're trying to create. So I'm also hoping to do a lot more of that, you know?
All right. Hey, Dave, I've kept you long enough.
All right.
Hey, man, it was a pleasure. If you haven't checked it out, make sure you get your butt over to Dave's blog, which is
www.davelow.blogspot.com.
Yeah, go over there and check out his blog. It has a ton of tutorials, funny little cartoons, just a lot of great stuff. You'll want to follow this blog. It's pretty killer. Other than that, Dave, it was a pleasure.
You too. Sorry for babbling. I don't get to talk to people very often.
No, that is absolutely fine. And we will catch you around the net.
Thanks, Chris.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing HauntCast with all your haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.